following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Guess what time it is? It is time for the True Wealth Radio Show, and this is the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. I'm your host, Dave Little John. Joining me today in studio, of course,
Matt Dixon.
All right, Matt. We are going to ruffle feathers today.
All the feathers or just some of the feathers?
Yep.
How many?
That's what we're going to do.
All right.
We're going to ruffle feathers. You decide how many got ruffled. I am not in charge of that decision. But here is, you ever ask yourself, hey, how much money does it take to get retired?
Yeah, I do. I wonder that because, like, for me, retirement's still kind of a long ways out, right? And so I'm looking at it and I'm like, well, how much money will I need? Because today, what I might be able to retire on in today's dollars could look wildly different. Like, what if inflation is 4% every single year for the next 20 years?
Or more.
Or more. Like, how much money do I really need? That's a kind of a tough question.
So we got to tackle that a little bit today.
Mm-hmm.
I have some thoughts on inflation. They're probably more simple than people realize. But
is it depressing? Is it optimistic?
Oh, I think it's kind of optimistic.
Okay.
Yeah,
nice.
I do. So I'm trying to pin you down on this one.
Yeah.
How do you decide how much money you need to retire?
Well, do you want my honest answer to this?
No, it's way better if you lie to the public on air.
That's what I prefer to
come
do.
Come on, you give me the honest answer.
I get the benefit of having planning software, right? And so I get to cheat a little bit because I can go in and be like, well, first I'd ask myself, how much money do I want in retirement every year, roughly?
Okay.
And then I'd give myself a cost of living adjustment because expenses are not static. So I'd come up with a number and I'd look at what I'm actually spending and say, well, do I want more than that? About the same? Can I go on less than that? And so I would look at what my expenses are and then I'd reverse engineer it to say, how much money do I actually need in order to keep my lifestyle afloat at the rate that I want to spend at?
Here's what I just heard. Blah, 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 blah. Hire an advisor.
Yeah, I mean, if you want my honest answer.
That's so self-serving.
I made no one else heard this because we weren't live yet, but you asked me that question, and I said, well, $1 million, obviously. Like, that's just got to be the magic number, right?
Yeah, and I just said, like, okay, well, just, you know what? Why don't you turn it off and turn it back on again and see how it works?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, it's the worst advice ever. I'm going to actually, first, yeah. I'm going to pose the question before the question. Sometimes I do this on air. If you've been a long-time listener, you've maybe heard me say this before. There's a question within the question, or there's a question before the question.
Okay? I can give you this answer.
Okay.
Because you actually wanted a dollar amount.
Well, all right.
It's a spoiler alert.
Let's play it out. Let's play. Go ahead.
Can I jump into 4%?
No, that's not where I'm going.
Okay. Like, well, then ask me this question later on, and I'll give you an answer.
It's coming right after this.
Okay.
So the first thing is, do you realize that how many people disagree on the definition of retirement?
Oh, it is so.
That's the question before the question is, well, what do you mean by retirement? That's
mm-hmm.
the question that we forgot to ask.
Right.
Because let me tell you, there's a whole spectrum. I have heard simply, I reached a certain age and I called myself retired.
A lot of people do that. That is very, very common.
Yeah. And some of the markers, some people say, well, I hit 62 years old and I started drawing my Social Security, so I'm retired.
People do this.
Okay, that's one definition.
Mm-hmm.
Others say, well, I hit 65 and I started taking Medicare, so I'm retired. That's a definition.
Mm-hmm.
Other people say, I received an inheritance and so I stopped working at that point. That's closer to what retirement is in my mind. So what do you think is a reasonable definition of retirement, Matt?
For me, it would be I have the ability to work, but I don't really have to anymore. I'm looking at everything and it's optional. It's my choice, right? I know where my finances sit and I could go keep working, but I have enough resources to where I don't have to.
Yeah. I like to say it this way because it's kind of easy to remember. I work because I want to, not because I have to. Okay. But really that's not retirement. That's financial freedom.
Yeah.
Financial freedom is the point at which your money is doing enough of the work that it can replace your income. So you no longer have to work for money.
Yeah.
So you can work because it's fulfilling. It provides meaning, purpose, whatever you want, but it's not because I need the money. So that's the first one. Then I do view retirement as exiting the employment space of you may volunteer and do other things, but when you leave the workforce, you are retired. If you are still in the workforce because somebody, even if you're self-employed, you're still setting your own schedule. But if somebody else is setting the schedule for you, retirement comes with a different type of control of your time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the biggie to me. And you can kind of tell because sometimes there's forced retirement. Oh, you can't keep working anymore, so we call you retired. There's another term for that sometimes. If it's a medical reason, you might be medically disabled from work.
Yeah.
But isn't it interesting that we don't have a pinned definition of retirement? It lives on that spectrum.
That is kind of interesting.
So now let's use the definition of retirement means that you are capable of stopping work and you can still have enough money in the form of income streams or a nest egg so that you don't have to work for money anymore. The question then is, how much does that number need to be to say, I don't have to work anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I can come back to you and ask the original question. With that as our definition, Matt, how much does it take to retire?
Yeah, and so it all depends on how the stock market goes. That's really the kind of the long and the short of it. After doing some research today, what your rate of return is really drives how well-funded you are.
So that's what this show is about today.
Yeah.
We're going to unpack for you. And so I'm going to encourage you all to try to stick around and listen as much as you can. And if you have to go, I don't normally plug this early, but go find this and listen as a podcast.
Sure. That's a good idea.
Go listen as a podcast. And if you don't know how to do that, you can go to our webpage at littlejohnfs.com. There's an area called the Knowledge Center, and there's a drop down there, and you can go find all these. They're recorded. You can grab them there. You can grab them at the station's website at 541radio.com tomorrow, or you can go to your favorite podcast service. And, if you're a podcaster, you know what we're talking about. So
yeah.
Apple, Android, they all have their different stores where you can get these. But go and get this episode. Okay.
I like that.
Because this is the stuff that what we're going to talk about today is what financial planners do for people, how they help walk them through it. So we're really going to break this process down a little bit here. And the first thing that we need to know, this is going to kind of guide everything moving forward. I have not prepped Matthew for this. We're about to test him as a financial advisor. Matthew.
Yes.
What is the first thing as an advisor you need to know to help somebody plan for their retirement?
Oh, the first thing? I mean, there's a million things. You need to know their age.
Okay.
You need to know what assets they hold, right?
Okay.
You need to know, this is the big one, what does their actual expenses look like?
Uh-huh.
He
got there, by the way. It took less. It was the third thing he said. They're all still related.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not fair when we don't really discuss a zinger like that. I kind of I kind of threw you under the bus.
Hey, I got it, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah.
Well, everybody out there listening, there is no way to plan on vapor, right? Like the idea that I have no idea what I spend. I don't track anything. By the way, a budget does not mean I know everything I spent on. That's
you
like
have to
I can
be
get
in
a
the
credit
ballpark.
Card statement and a bank statement. I can see all the transactions.
You
right?
have to be in the ballpark.
The point is that you have to have a sense of what you do mm-hmm. spend and what you plan to spend.
True story. I did a plan for someone, and everything looked great. And we had assumed that the spending rate would be like $80,000 a year. It was double that. I mean, 3 years later, we're looking at true expenses. It was double.
Yeah.
And the equation, that breaks everything, right? Like in this instance, it did. There just wasn't enough funds there to keep up with the expense. Yeah, and it's like you were way off on what you thought you were spending.
I know. We've got some listeners that are, they're probably just going, well, duh. You would be surprised the number of people. I've said this before. The good news is, remember, we have the smart listeners.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. So I can, all of you guys, I'm not really talking to you. You're the smart ones. You're listening. But to the idiots out there, right, there's people that will spend more time planning their next meal than they will spend figuring out their finances.
Yep.
Like in a year.
Yeah.
They just let the finances happen to them. Well, is the money in my account or not? Soccer, where did it go? There's just such a limited amount of attention paid. And so
there's a lot of people that are reactionary. That's all the oh, something happened, I'll do this. And then they never address the issue at the source.
Here's the thing about a budget. Pro tip. Even if you're not very good at it, writing a budget down raises your level of awareness. Okay. It raises your level of awareness such that you will pay more attention to what you're spending if you write it down with some intentionality behind it. Right? You write down a budget that's so divorced from reality that it's not real to you, it doesn't do the same thing, right? It's kind of like saying, I'm gonna earn $1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000 say, I want to find a job that pays me six figures a year, and I'm going to develop the skills, and I'm going to go out there and become worth that much, it is amazing how your mind subconsciously goes to work to deliver that. And the same is true for your money.
You know, this is a pro tip that I'm going to pass along. One of the things that I struggled with early on when it came to money was I tried to do the whole budget thing right out of the gate, right? And it's like, well, here's what I think my budget should be. And then I would wait and see at the end of the month, did I hit that number? And what I never did at the beginning was just track expenses. Everyone wants to talk about a budget. And I would say before you even get into the like creating a budget, know where you're at. Know what your expenses are and get a baseline that averages out over a series of months. Because if you can know that number, then you can actually make a realistic budget, because you can want your budget to be $2,000 a month, but if your fixed expenses are $3,000 a month, like
it's
just never
going
to work. So you got to know what your break-even costs are.
So I have a – let's do this. We're going to grab a break. When we come back, I'm not going to bore you with this because budgets to me aren't fun, okay? But I can give you guys a quick budget hack if you're out there that can help you figure it out pretty quick, and so that you can develop a budget over a pay cycle or two. So let's talk about that. And then we're going to get into the real stuff that you care about. How much do I need to retire? Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Okay, we are covering the idea of how much money does it take to retire. We haven't actually talked a lot about this. And get caught up, grab the podcast. It's at littlejohnfs.com. It's also on all the very favorite podcasty places. Just look for The True Wealth Show and Little John Financial, and you'll find us. What I want to touch base on, and we said we'd do this for our listeners, is look, budgeting is a key part of this. To figure out how much you need to retire, you got to need to like know how much you're going to spend. And budgets are lame, I get it, but the way that you can do this is look at budgets not with your money first. There are a bunch of examples out there of category budgets, like X percentage should go to my car, X percentage to my home, X percentage to food, X percentage to clothing, and so forth. Start with that. And then what you can do is try to match what you are spending to these categories. See if you're out of alignment, right? So you're not building a budget first. You're just matching it to one that somebody else has already sort of made for you categorically.
Okay.
If you see that your spending is way out of alignment, now you have to address behaviors. You know, do I have to figure out how to make more money because I'm just unwilling to change? Do I have to figure out how to alter my spending habits in order to get into the budget? And there is flexibility in there. Like maybe 30% goes to housing, but you're only spending 20%. That frees up more money to go elsewhere. But if you're spending 40%, then you have less money elsewhere. You have to figure out how to make the budget balance. The thing people forget is they forget to save for the future. They want it, they save last. And if you pay yourself last, you'll be the last person to ever get paid, which means you don't get paid. You need to save first and then live off of the rest. So pick a percentage and do that. Use retirement plans at work if you've got them available to you. Get some emergency savings in place. This is the stuff that guy out there, you maybe you've heard his name before, that whole Dave Ramsey crowd, they preach this stuff and they actually do a really good job if it's not a natural proclivity for you, right? If you're not a natural saver, like to savers, this is pretty easy because they don't like to spend the same way. But if you're a spender and not a saver, he's got some systems that are just rock solid for helping you develop those initial habits. The envelope system for budgeting is really effective. I'm not saying it's fun. That's not what I'm saying. But it's really effective. But start with that, because what it'll do over 2 or 3 months, if you just go through the discipline of categorizing what you're doing, and Matt, I think this is what you said earlier in the like last segment. You said like categorize what you're spending, figure out if you know where it's at, track your expenses.
Yeah, that's the spot to start. Before you ever start trying to actually create a budget, track it so that you know like where you're at. Yes. And naturally, if you see, oh, wow, 55% of my spending is in this area, and you know that, what are you naturally going to be more careful on spending in the area that you're overspending in?
Yeah, if you're really looking to change. For the person, well, if you do a budget, you're probably really looking to change. The people that don't want to change, they're just like, I don't want to do that. It's too painful.
So we just praised Dave Ramsey a little bit. Now, what about Dave Littlejohn? So Dave Ramsey, you know, are we jumping too far ahead in the show here?
We're jumping a little ahead, but it's a good teaser. We're going to come back to this. Dave Ramsey's got some great advice, but not all of it is stuff that I am going to subscribe to. Different reasons for it, okay? So stick with me on this. We don't hate Dave Ramsey.
Right.
But we're going to call him out on a couple of things where we go, hey, careful, bro. I'm not sure that that advice is that strategically sound. You know, you're going to start introducing too much luck into the formula and not enough math. Okay. So hang on. We're going to get there.
Okay. Let's walk me into kind of how this develops.
So we've talked about the budget.
Right.
Okay.
What's the next piece?
Well, let's the last piece of budget is you've got your actual and your aspirational budget. The thing about retirement, especially if you've got years to go, is you don't have to say, I need to maintain the life I have right now. You can say, this is the life I'd like to have. My budget categories would look like this. And then you can design toward that if you have enough time.
Yeah.
This is where you hear planners say, look, had you come to me 20 years ago, we'd have had lots of options. You're coming to me with 2 years until retirement. That field of options is going to narrow a lot because you're not going to be able to pull that many levers and change that much. So we're going to be designing a retirement to fit the resources you have rather than designing a way to accumulate the resources to build the retirement that you were hoping for.
Okay.
Okay. Now, a lot of people, you know, they're not hoping for an exotic retirement. They just want to maintain the lifestyle they have. Cool. That's cool. All right. So I'm not judging that one. I'm just saying your option set shrinks the longer you wait. That's why it's better. If you don't know how to do it, get help now, right? You could hire somebody to get help, become proficient to do it yourself, and then take over. That is even possible. So
seen that.
Like
I feel like you've seen it all at this point.
You see all the kinds. You take enough laps, you see it all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you've figured out what you're going to spend kind of per month. Then you can multiply that by 12, you get a sense of how much you're going to spend for the year. You got to do a little mechanics about, I'm going to back the taxes out. What's the next thing they can do, Matt? Hint, talk to me about Social Security.
like optimizing around it? Or?
Not optimizing. Why do we have to consider it? What does that mean?
I mean, the government is handing you money, right, every single month, and that number can change. They can cost of living adjust it, and it's just another one of those buckets of money that funds your lifestyle.
That funding the lifestyle part, gang. We need to consider, do you have pension income? Mm-hmm. Do you have rental income? Do you have income that's going to consistently show up that is going to help fund your lifestyle? Because if you do, the nest egg requirement is going to shrink.
Wouldn't you say that a lot of the plans that you've done over the years, the most successful people that come out of this are the ones that have multiple different income streams, where it's like you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, where it's like, well, if this one thing goes away or fails, the whole plan implodes. I've noticed, at least from what I've seen.
I really like the question. Yeah. Well, you know why? Because it implies that one way is successful, more successful than another. It's great if you've got pensions and Social Security and other income streams.
Yeah.
But not everybody's going to be in an environment where a pension's an option, right? A lot of the private sector, that's not going to be available to them.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, I don't want people thinking, oh, great, so I'm kind of got a strike against me already. No, you don't. It's what it is a different mechanism to achieve the same outcome. So I like the diversification. Like a pension's great because somebody else has to manage the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of nice, unless they blow it, right? If they don't do the job right, that's a different problem. Right? Hey, yeah. I thought I was going to have a pension and they screwed it up and now the pension's underfunded and we got a problem.
Yeah.
Ask United Auto Workers about 15, 20 years ago when we went through 2008 and we hit the fan with the meltdown and GM was going bankrupt and they were trying to figure out how union workers that had worked and been promised this benefit, they couldn't afford it. What were they going to do? It was a mess. Right. So pensions are only as good as the guarantee behind them.
Right.
Government pensions tend to be pretty solid because they're backed by a printing press.
I guess the harder thing, is from the planning perspective. When all there is say, an IRA and Social Security, it's like, well, my option set on how we get creative around taxes becomes kind of constrained.
Yeah, there's way fewer levers to pull there. Although the truth of the matter is between Social Security, especially in Oregon doesn't tax Social Security, which is nice, but depending on how much income you have, the feds may tax some of it. And all of the other tax-deferred buckets behave the same way. Whether it's a pension, it's income,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, it's an IRA distribution, it's income. It's 401k distribution, income. 403b, income, right? Roth IRA, aha.
Yeah.
Has it been alive for 5 years? Maybe
or the Roth 401k stuff that I've seen, that's been a powerful tool, and a lot of people don't even know sometimes when it's available.
Yeah, that one's controversial to me.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't want to go too deep into it, but let me just put it this way. If you're doing a Roth 401k because you're ineligible to do a Roth IRA,
mm-hmm.
why would you be ineligible for a Roth IRA?
Because your income's too high.
Your income is too high, which means you're not getting a very valuable tax break
mm-hmm.
on that Roth because you're putting it into a 401k still in the highest tax bracket. So it'll turn some of it into tax-free. But the only reason that would be, well, not the only reason, one of the primary reasons it would be valuable in the future is because you expect your tax bracket to remain very high.
Right.
And most people, their tax bracket drops in retirement.
Yeah.
So that's why it's controversial for me.
That's an interesting take. Yeah. I like it.
But let's get back to the question. We've now kind of established, and let me tease it this way, because we're kind of up against the next break. So let me tease it this way. Matt?
Yes?
Dave Ramsey and I disagree about something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We disagree about how much money you need to have to safely fund a nest egg.
Okay.
Okay. So
I get to be the tie-breaking vote? Is that what you're saying? You've got your vote. Dave Ramsey's got his. I'm the tiebreaker.
Let's do this. We're going to go to break. We're going to let Matt be the tiebreaker, but I would like to make the case before you decide.
Okay.
Okay, gang.
I'll be the judge.
Stick around. We're going to figure out which Dave's take do you want to take on how much you need to retire? Dave Ramsey or Dave Littlejohn?
Okay.
Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
All right, gang. Remember, this show today, how much money do you need to retire? We're not giving you the number. We're giving you the process of how a financial planner would typically break this down and help you decide. So if you are going to listen to the entire program, and then you can throw it in Notebook LM or something and say, summarize this for me because it took too long, okay, then you're going to kind of have a roadmap to approach this, okay? The reason that I keep using the soft language is because somebody goes, you should do exactly this. And I said, well, I gave you a framework. You're going to have to use it appropriately. Tools in the wrong hands can still create adverse outcomes. How's that for a disclosure?
Yeah, I mean, if you got a hammer, doesn't mean that you're going to actually drive a nail. You might smash your thumb.
There you go. Okay, let's get to the question. Everybody's waiting for us to get to the point of Matt. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got Social Security, maybe some pensions, maybe some annuity income, maybe they got rental income, but they still need to fill the gap. They have a budget of X number of dollars per month that they need, and they don't have enough income streams to do it. They need a nest egg to plug the gap.
Right.
And my question to you is, after all of this hoopla, how big of a nest egg do they need?
Well, do you have a magic equation that people can use where it's like, well, take this amount of money, times it by this, and now you're okay?
Well, here's the fun. Do you want Dave's equation or Dave's equation?
Well, see, what I want you to do is make your case. Because remember, I'm just a judge, right?
Okay.
You make your case for what you think it should be, and then talk to me about where Dave Ramsey stands, and then at the end, I will make a verdict.
I have sad news for Matthew. I'm about to throw a curveball at him, and he's not going to see it coming.
Ah.
There's a third option.
Puerto Rico.
Not on your notes. Oh, no. This is going to be the best. Okay. Traditional, conservative way to figure out how much to save. I'm going to give you the hack, and then I'm going to explain why it works.
Okay.
Take your annual income that you need. And don't do it after taxes. Do it before taxes because you're going to have to pay taxes. Right?
Okay.
And multiply it by 25.
Okay.
Okay? And that's your number. So if you need $100,000 a year, 25 times 100,000 is $2.5 million.
Okay.
And you go, that seems like a big number. I go, yes, it does. And by the way, option three is going to make this even more relevant because what I'm really explaining to you is something we call the 4% rule. Hmm. If you take 4% of your nest egg out each year and then allow the growth in that nest egg to recover over the course of the year, the theory is that this money should last not less than 30 years. And this has been studied a lot because it matters if next week the markets crash.
Right. Say the markets drop 20%.
20%. It changes your financial calculus.
Yeah.
So the idea is that at 4%, not a fixed number, 4%. So you were taking out 4% of, a $2.5 million portfolio. It's $100,000. The portfolio drops to $2 million. You don't take $100,000 still. Actually, believe it or not, in the original case, you still can. It's mm-hmm. like you don't have to drop the starting value.
But right,
the 4% never goes up until the account exceeds the original value.
So you're saying it's not a static 4? You're saying that, say...
Yeah, I am saying that. It's 4%, and you look at it once a year. So if you had $2 million, and next year you have $3 million, you can take 4% of $3 million out the following year. By the way, earlier in the program, you said, what about inflation?
Mm-hmm.
This is how the inflation gets factored in. You don't have to get that cute with it because you automatically get a raise. If the markets are going up, they're typically reactive to inflation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it gets sort of built into the equation. And so this is a really conservative number. By the way, if you're really mostly taking out just the interest you're earning every year, your nest egg never gets depleted. And some people go, wait a second. My plan is to die with nothing left. I don't need to leave anything to anybody. I'm going to spend my last cent.
And we talked earlier about how a lot of this can be based on how your investments do. But you're saying even if, you know, you're using pretty conservative style investments, if you're taking 4%, it's pretty hard to break.
It's pretty hard to screw it up because you're limiting, you know, if your account shrinks aggressively the next year, you have to reduce your withdrawals. But if the account grows, you give yourself a raise.
Yeah.
So you're just taking 4% of the value. So that works pretty well. Hard to break it, even with an aggressive sequence of negative returns.
Yeah.
Because the portfolio, you're leaving enough to recover. But that's not very satisfying to a lot of people. So enter Dave number other, right? You had the Dave Littlejohn one of, well, that's 4%. Then you have the Dave Ramsey version who says, actually, you should take closer to 8% out. And he's been on air saying, yeah, take an 8% withdrawal rate because the historical return of the stock market's 11%, and you're going to get 3% to protect you from inflation, and 8% is coming and going. You'll be fine. We did some testing on this, and the probabilities are not nearly as attractive. If you take 8% out and you go through a period like 2008 where the markets melt down, you actually could get to a point where if you don't reduce your spend. And remember in the first year, I said, you don't have to go below your starting value at 4%.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if the markets go down immediately, you keep the 4%. If you do that with the Dave Ramsey method, you may deplete your money. It won't last 30 years or longer. And the probabilities go up pretty quickly if you have a bad sequence of returns.
Speaking of probabilities, mm-hmm. I did a little bit of math because I knew the 8% Dave thing that you mentioned and your 4% Dave thing.
Okay, so tell me the math.
All right, so what's interesting is if you look at like, hey, you live for 30 years after retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pull at 8%, like what Dave Ramsey is talking about, even if you have your money 100% in stocks and you're being aggressive and trying to get, you know, higher returns, the failure rate on that where you run out of money is actually like 56%.
Yeah.
So more often than not, you actually do run out of money if you pull 8%, which that's wild to me to think that like, wait, so this is like, you have like basically a 50-50 chance of making it?
Okay, well now, let's before we throw him under the bus, let me throw a couple of factoids at you real quick.
Okay.
Remember, that says what's the probability of it lasting 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If most people retire at full Social Security retirement age of 67, most people don't make it 30 years.
That's true.
Okay. So it doesn't have to go 30 years.
But
if you retire at 50,
longer.
You know, it's a different game.
Yeah.
You know, making it to 80 is not so outrageous. So there's some hedging to this.
Sure. Okay? There really is.
And so this to me is interesting. Because now we've got two different schools of thought, right? There's the really ultra-conservative, the numbers say you have a – there's never a zero chance.
No.
Right? Investing involves risk, past performances, no prediction
but
of the future,
that 30,
all that stuff.
But the 30-year success rate withdrawing at 4% is almost 100% success rate.
It's really, really high. It's statistically very significant, like more than two standard deviations.
Yeah.
You're likely to have this work.
Yeah, very, very likely.
And the math makes a lot of sense. It would get really pretty ugly. Like the economy's kind of collapsing. And if I often remind people, if the economy's really collapsing, we have much bigger problems. You know, if we're going into a sort of a recessionary downward spiral that becomes depression.
Or deflation.
That's a different animal.
Yeah.
And that you could see it in some countries, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
If your population replacement level goes below replacement level,
China's
kind of there right now. A lot of Europe, they're just not having enough babies. That's not a good way to sustain your economy.
No,
you need to have the generation behind you that's continuing to do things. Japan has tried to solve a lot of this with robotics and automation, but it's still a lot of economic pressure.
It is. So it's a ton.
There's a third option. I'm going to surprise you.
I was going to say, this isn't in the Cliff Notes. What's the third option?
So just so selling you can watch organs. Matt tap dance. No, you don't sell your organs.
Ah.
You sell your neighbor's organs. No, I'm kidding. All right. Stick around. We're going to grab our last break. When we come back, the third option. You heard the 4% rule,
uh-huh.
The 8% rule. We're going to talk about the rule that you're probably really interested in. So
okay.
Stick around. Be right back. And I still got to convince Matt that the third one is the best one.
Okay.
All right. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth. On News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where yep. Matt and I are about to slug it out for the last segment here.
I'm ready.
Matt, how big of a nest egg? Remember, we talked about retirement today. How much does it take? We said we had to include cash flow streams like Social Security, pensions. If you own real estate that's paid for, maybe that's supplementing you. Right? There's a lot of ways that you can have income. You also, we're talking about how big of a nest egg.
Right.
And the question is, how much do you need? And we're reverse engineering it to the lifestyle you're trying to pay for. And we've talked about, do you use a really conservative rule? Like, well, I need a nest egg big enough that I only take 4% out of it, and that will sustain me. It's a much bigger number to reach than if you use the Dave Ramsey recommendation of 8%. But I'm going to throw a curveball at Matt because it's not in his notes.
I guessed well at the break, didn't I?
Yeah. No. If you want to know, go watch the live stream. It's still on YouTube. It's up there. And you could see what Matt said. It'll be somewhere at about minute 47 or so, where I'm just like, you don't say that. But here we are. So what did I propose?
You proposed basically when things are good, take a little more, and when things are bad, take a little less.
Yeah, it's a hybrid approach that starts with the idea that you can take a little bit higher amount and it adjusts lower as you age. The most expensive years, like let's say people are retiring at 65, and that's just because a lot of people choose that around Medicare, and they're in the window of Social Security. It's a fairly traditional time that you can adopt, that you can do that.
Yeah, the chances
some,
of
some
them.
Some younger, some not, but like that's a good common number. At 65, 30-year lifespan possible, but not as probable actuarially, right? You've got to live to 95. So 4% is really conservative at age 65. You could find that you end up having a lot of money left over that you could have spent and didn't.
Right.
So spend a little more in your 60s and 70s, where we still have some gas in the tank.
Are you encouraging people to party it up?
I think
in their 60s,
in
a little bit.
So many words, I'm kind of saying that.
Okay, so that Europe trip might be a reality.
I'm saying that
maybe.
If you're going to spend more,
that's
a good time to do it, because the theory is your best years are now.
Mm-hmm.
Your health is a wild card. It doesn't mean you will not have your health later, but everybody taps out at some point. And so every day that you wait is a chance that your health becomes an issue. So it's a different game.
Sure.
So those experiences, well, when you first retire, there's a joke. Every day is Saturday. Right? So it costs a little bit more at first. So anticipate some of that and know that you're going to spend a little bit more in those years. And then as you slow down, the spending should slow down. And what would disrupt that would be a medical event that required spending. It's usually a medical care event. If you have a long-term care need that's prolonged, that's what can get expensive and drain the tank. But guess what? At that point, you're not spending it doing all of the things anymore, because you're not capable of doing them, right? If you're requiring care at that point, you're not climbing Kilimanjaro. You're not taking the trip to Paris. You know, those things become too difficult.
Sure.
So I think it's relevant to look at variable rates of return. And this is where a planner really can help you, because if you've got a planning relationship rather than just a transactional relationship, this is where stockbrokers didn't do this the same way. But the planning relationship, and again, you can DIY this, but it's nice to have somebody else to help keep you objective and grounded.
Absolutely. Right?
Somebody that's got some clinical detachment from the decision to help make sure that you're walking this path. And it doesn't have to be us. Yeah, it's our show, and we kind of throw our phone number out and stuff. But if you've got somebody that you like and trust that can do this, great. Okay. But the variable return, it involves recalibrating each year.
That's a smart tactic,
right? Because, so you're in an accumulation phase. You're trying to get to the number that makes sense for the lifestyle you want. As you're approaching it, you start to recalibrate. What's the lifestyle that we can achieve?
Can I tell you a true story?
Yes.
Okay. So at our firm, we have this software called Asset Map, right? And so
you can get this for free, by the way. Yeah. If you want to go to our website, it's actually there.
Mm-hmm. I was doing an annual review for someone recently, and I've been dealing with these people, you know, for like 5 years. Wonderful people, and very frugal. And I was watching, you know, and I can think back 5 years ago doing this asset map, and the funding percentage, it was like, well, they're 102% funded. And so it's one of those things where it's like, oh.
It's projecting the probability that they'll be successful.
Correct.
So it says they're going to make it, but it, you know, it's not like 140% or something.
Yep. Okay. So fast forward to their annual review 5 years later, extremely frugal, like hardly buying clothes frugal.
Yeah.
The plan went to 150% in 5 years. So it's like they were super frugal, and their plan dynamics completely shifted. And I'm over here like, hey, please spend more money. You want to go buy clothes? Go do it. Like,
yes.
It's
sometimes
by all means.
This really does happen, by the way. We have people that, if you're not a saver, you don't run into this problem very often.
Right.
Because you're sitting there going, shoot, I didn't save enough. Well, yeah. But to the natural saver, sometimes we have to say, look, you have saved for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You do not need to deny yourself. By the way, it's very hard to get somebody out of that mental framework because framework that got them there doesn't just change. But we have seen people really feel like a weight was lifted off of them to learn you have statistically, mathematically, probabilistically enough that you can do these things. I've told people things like, they're like, I don't want to travel anymore. It's too hard. It's too rough. It's just hard on me. I go, if you were traveling first class, would it change your opinion? And they're like, well, yeah, I mean, the seats would be more comfortable. I probably would still do it. Mm-hmm. And then we show them you can afford to do it this way.
Yeah.
And they just, the light bulb comes on like, you're kidding. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not the person that can do that.
Uncommon for that to bring people to tears.
Like, yeah, we've had it happen.
A lot, yeah.
So there you have it, Matt. I'm now going to call the vote. We have three options. We have the Dave Littlejohn. I don't think that's really mine, but we'll say we have the 4% distribution rule,
mm-hmm.
8% distribution rule, or the variable distribution rule.
I love to try and disagree. It's my favorite thing on this show is to be able to take the opposite view. However,
sky is blue. No, it's cloudy.
Yeah. However, today I have to agree because whenever I'm doing plans and working an asset map with people, I'm saying that too, where it's like, hey, you know, it says this static amount, but there's going to be years. Like, look at the last 3 years. The market's been up 20%, and then the next year it's up, you know. So it's like on series of really good years. Open up the checkbook a little bit more, and hey, if it's down a bunch 1 year, well, tighten it up a little bit.
Yeah. So
adapt.
Exactly.
Adapt or die.
I'm going to give you guys a hint here. For everybody, we keep talking about the asset map. This is something that you can personally go do. We have a link to it through our website. If you go to littlejohnfs.com, there's a few tabs up there, and one of them is called strategic planning. If you click on the strategic planning tab, and scroll down, you'll see where it says asset map. There's a little video. You can kind of learn about it and just see how it works. And then there's also a button below that will allow you to launch a secure portal where you don't have to give away any personally identifiable information. No account numbers, no birthdays or social, none of that stuff. But you could build an asset map, and then what it'll do is we can send it to you, okay? And so I'm making the offer is, if you would like one of these, you do not have to become a client. You can just go enter the data, and we'll send it to you. You can see what we're talking about.
You know what else people can do on that website? They can chat or email if they are interested in the upcoming Will and Trust seminar.
That's true. We do have to promote that a little bit more. If you are trying to figure out, should I get a will? What about a trust? What does that even mean? You know, what happens to my stuff if I die? You know, who can help me? We're giving a class.
It's radically expensive, however.
Yeah. The class is free, but we have only so many seats, so we're still... we promoted a little bit last week just on the radio. It's going to be kind of going out, you know, to the rest of our people. So, but if you want this, go sign up. Go email info@littlejohnfs.com. Again, this is August 20th. It's going to be from about 6 to 8 p.m. I know it's dinner time, but we didn't want people to have to, like, try to cut out from work.
Will we have, like, some cookies and juice or something?
It'll be snacks and stuff. But,
okay.
You can also call the office if you want to learn more. 541-375-0898.
There's not many seats left to this thing.
I think there's a couple.
Yeah.
But it's getting full. So just try to, you know, get signed up if you want to. If you got other questions, give us a shout. But that's kind of the biggie for the day. Now you know the shortcut. If you multiply your income need by 25, you're going to be close to the nest egg that you need, and then we can work with it from there. But
all right.
We're out of time for now, so I guess we better run. Matt, thanks as always.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
All right. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.